Under the Golden Dome is supported by the Iowa Bankers Association. Bankers across Iowa are ready to help Iowans reach their financial goals to get them where they want to go. Learn about the difference of Iowa banks by following Iowa Bankers on Facebook and Twitter.
From Iowa Public Radio News, this is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly legislative podcast from Iowa Public Radio. I'm John Pimble. There are around 650,000 people enrolled in Medicaid in Iowa. Around 170,000 are through the Iowa Health and Wellness Plan. This is for people between the age of 19 to 64 with an income around $15,000 a year for an individual or $21,000 for a family of two. Under a bill proposed by Republican Senator Jason Schultz, 40% of those on the Iowa Health and Wellness Plan will need to have part-time work or volunteer to stay on the program.
The best social program is a job.
Schultz is advocating a work requirement for some people to continue receiving Medicaid.
Are they able to do something for 20 hours a week? That would be either to go to work, a volunteer. They could enter a job program. They could do something that betters themselves.
The work requirement has 11 exemptions. They include those who are pregnant, disabled, in rehab, or enrolled in the Future Ready Iowa program. Schultz says 67,000 people on the Iowa Health and Wellness Plan that aren't presently reporting any earnings could help fill Iowa's workforce.
Because we are having a problem finding workers for our businesses. They're asking for, can we get more people to apply for jobs? And quite a few of those employers are noting that while you pay people to stay at home so well that we can't get them to come apply, sometimes we can't get them to keep coming to work because staying at home is easier and pays better.
Republican Senator Jeff Edler says this bill is aimed at able-bodied Iowans who are not generating income.
This bill is simply asking able-bodied Iowans to give back to the community and to other Iowans. I hope we can agree on that. Through work, volunteering, and having opportunities to educate themselves, to be productive citizens. Iowans overwhelmingly support accountability and entitlement programs. Today we have a chance to provide accountability in one of those programs, as well as provide a compassionate nudge for success to the able-bodied individuals who will be asked to meet the new requirements of the Iowa Health and Wellness Program.
Democratic Senator Amanda Reagan opposes this bill. She says the work requirement may have unintended consequences when people show up to volunteer simply because of a Medicaid requirement.
I don't know if you've got somewhere in here that you're doing background checks, that you're paying for those people that are volunteering. If that's a part of it, if you're taking care of things like getting people the transportation to where they need to be, I don't see that in here. But those are things that in, especially rural Iowa, that could be a problem because not everything is as accessible. I think this bill needs more in-depth study. I don't think it's ready for prime time.
I would argue that this bill is not only ready for prime time, I would argue it's about time.
Republican Senator Jerry Bain.
I talked to a local contractor, built bins. There was a young gentleman came work for him about a day, maybe day and a half. He quit. The contractor said, "Why are you quitting?" He said, "Well, the work is hard. I would rather play video games." I would submit to you that that is not an option. And if it is, shame on us for letting that happen. That is totally inappropriate. That's precisely what this bill is attempting to address. It is simply a compassionate nudge towards being successful.
Democratic Senator Pam Yoakum argues this bill is not about work requirements.
It's about new reporting requirements. Reporting requirements are going to add another $5 million of taxpayer money that'll need to go to the Department of Human Services in order to track all of this down.
According to a Legislative Services Agency fiscal note, this program will cost $5 million to implement in the first year, which would be fiscal year 2021, and $12 million for each subsequent year.
If we really wanted to make a difference, really help the rising tide that's going to lift all boats, then we would be taking that $5 million and we would be investing it in future-ready Iowa. We would be investing it in affordable childcare. We would be investing it in reliable transportation. We would be investing it in living wage jobs. I would like nothing better than if fewer Iowans would have to be reliant on any government program whatsoever. Wouldn't need help with rent, wouldn't need help with health care, wouldn't need help with food assistance because they were earning enough money to do it on their own. But my friends, we ranked 48th in the nation for wages. Think about that. I'm pretty ashamed of that number.
Senator Edler says the Democrats' opposition to this bill often cites the work requirement as an obstacle or barrier.
You know, we talk about obstacles and barriers. Where else in Iowa is getting a job or getting education a barrier? Why is that a barrier? These individuals, we're trying to give them access, get them education, and ask them to give back to the community. You know, healthy, we've heard that mentioned several times today. Well, you know, if you're not working, and I'm not going to say sitting on a couch, but if you're not working and or keeping busy, the likelihood that you're healthy drops significantly. We've talked about transportation, child care assistance, health issues. Many of these things are being addressed, and I've had conversations with many of you about how to address these and some of the programs that are coming up. That's why in the introduction I said it's a suite of bills to address welfare and to reform the system, to help people, to lift them up, not hold them down. I don't know where the breakdown is between this aisle here of what helping people and continuing on a system that is broken.
The suggestion that because one is in poverty that they don't have something to offer society is disingenuous.
Republican Senator Jake Chapman.
Whether it's volunteering at a nursing home, playing bingo, those are all things that lift us as a society. This is about the respect and dignity of individual people. And so I take exception to the notion that these folks, simply because of poverty, don't have something to offer Iowa as a society. And that's why I support this bill. I think the ability to receive benefits in hard times is an important component to our society. It's an important component to our government and the way we govern. But the ability to have that feeling, that self-respect of earning those benefits is important.
Do you think people on Medicaid get up every morning and say, wow, I love being on Medicaid. I love being poor. Bring it on. No, they don't do that.
Democratic Senator Liz Mathis says the Democrats stand behind the dignity of work.
I don't want you to believe that we are rejecting this bill because we don't believe in work. We do believe in work. We voted for Future Ready Iowa. We believe in upskilling. We believe in cross-collaboration and creating new jobs and training around those new jobs. That's the way the state moves forward, right? It's the way the state moves forward. Some of the people on Medicaid have been left behind. They're not able to do that. They may be in a situation at that time and place that they can't sustain a job. Senator Bain, I thought it, you know, when you brought up this one person, a kid who wants to play video games instead, well, there's probably a problem around that, right?
The bill's floor manager, Senator Jason Schultz, reiterates the bill's 11 exemptions. If a person does not qualify for one of those exemptions and doesn't begin working or volunteering 20 hours a week, they will be placed on a limited benefit plan. If they don't begin working in the following 6 months, their benefits will be discontinued.
We're doing this to better people. We're doing this to give people a chance at a better life. I agree, people don't want to be on programs such as this. People don't ask. Nobody says in school, when asked, what do you want to be when you grow up? Nobody says that. And I don't think that they aspire to this. I don't think they plan on it. I don't. But I do think people fall into situations in their lives where sometimes it takes a bump to get moving forward again. I've been in those spots. Not for long. Fortunately, I had a father who wouldn't tolerate it. So I've been in those spots for typically less than 15 minutes. However, there are times when somebody needs a bump to say that, hey, you need to do something. You need to get out of the house. You need to do something, whether that's volunteer work. Do something.
On party lines, this bill passes. If it also passes the House and is signed by the governor, it will require approval at the federal level. If everything moves forward, the Department of Human Services anticipates the program would be implemented early 2021. This is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly podcast about the Iowa legislature. I'm John Pimble. The Children's System State Board was established last year by an executive order from Governor Kim Reynolds. Before the session, the board released its strategic goals with target dates of 2020 and 2021. They include ways to provide services, treatment, and therapy to children. The details of how and where funding will come from is up to the legislature, but it's not expected to be entirely answered with a single bill. Some funding may come from federal block grants. A House appropriations bill written by the governor with multiple sections about where federal block grants will go comes before a public hearing. In the second section, Governor Reynolds wants most of a $5 million grant to go to services for children identified by the Children's System State Board. Right now, that $5 million grant is going to 25 state organizations that service a variety of needs like substance abuse, domestic abuse, social services, and mental health.
First, I want to say that I fully support creating a children's mental health system.
Cynthia Steidel-Bishop is from Eyerly Ball Community Mental Health Services. Eyerly is one center that received some of that $5 million this year.
What I don't support is taking money from one mental health system to fund another mental health system.
Steidel Bishop is from one of those 25 organizations that may not receive a grant next year under the governor's proposed changes.
The state has requirements for how block grant dollars can be used. CMHCs most generally use those dollars for direct services or to improve quality.
CMHC means Clinical Mental Health Counseling.
This year, Eyerly Ball has used these dollars to bring in a national trainer that has helped us improve wait times, access to services, and improve efficiencies. With the opioid crisis, the block grant has allowed the Eyerly Ball therapist to be trained in specific substance abuse treatment methods to provide more treatment options to Central Iowa.
Kim Scorza from the Season Center for Behavioral Health says the block grants have helped her organization receive additional money from other grants. She does not support the governor's proposed change.
We take our services for children very, very seriously. We've been successful in able to recruit a child and adolescent psychiatrist. And most recently, we were awarded a CCBHC grant from SAMHSA, which is going to allow us to have $4 million over the next 2 years to provide services to kids in Northwest Iowa as well as adults.
CCBHC means Certified Community Behavioral Health Clinic. And SAMHSA is a branch of the Federal Department of Health and Human Services. It stands for Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. Kim Scorza says getting that extra $4 million would not have been possible if they hadn't received the block grant dollars.
That helped us get the training that we needed to position ourselves to apply for that those federal dollars. And so when you look at a system that you're taking money from here and moving over here and you're fragmenting it even more, what you're doing is you're weakening community mental health centers further.
Andrew Allen is the CEO of Youth and Shelter Services. Allen supports this change of block grant funding.
Currently, these block grant funds are restricted to 25 community mental health centers. And while most do a good job, just one, only one agency, the Child Guidance Center at Orchard Place, as far as I can see, has a primary focus on kids. The other 24 agencies serve mostly adults and some kids.
Allen says too often kids get smaller versions of services designed for adults.
Kids are not simply short adults. Kids are distinctly different and need specialty programs and benefit from specialty providers focused on them.
Allen says the change proposed in this bill would provide funding to organizations like Youth Shelter Services, who presently are not receiving part of the block grant.
I'm probably not making a lot of friends right now as I stand amongst my peers who are doing great and tireless work in a difficult field with limited resources. But agencies advocating for the status quo are part of an inner circle built with a focus on adults. It's time to create a new circle, a new system, focused intently on kids. And on behalf of kids, thank you for your consideration.
The next day, the bill moves to a subcommittee. Some of the same organizations from the public hearing are here. Most are worried about Section 2's change. Mary Nell Trez from Child and Family Policy Center summarizes the general concern.
Our budget's a reflection of our values, so if we truly value and prioritize creating a children's mental health system, we can't just reallocate funds, shifting funds from one place to another in an already unfunded system. We really need to invest in creating a children's mental health system, so we have concerns with the implications of what taking these funds from a community mental health center.
Maddie Miller from Easter Seals, Iowa says she appreciates the work going on to create a children's mental health system.
But we do have some major concerns regarding the funding and where that's coming from. Primarily regarding Section 2, we're concerned that that won't be enough to properly fund the children's mental health system in its entirety. So we have some concerns related to that. And really we just support adding some new dollars to that rather than taking from some of those other programs in that way.
The representatives on this three-member appropriations subcommittee agree there are complications with this bill's second section. The subcommittee is chaired by Republican Representative Ray Sorensen. Sorensen says an amendment will be written that would make the section go back to the process used in previous years.
The language in the bill and the discussion yesterday's public hearing raises legitimate issues as we work towards establishing a children's mental health system. I would be interested in adding to the bill some reporting requirements in Section 2. We need to see how these funds are used by the community mental health centers and that they fit into our mental health system. I think we should see how much of the money is used by each CMHC to support the adult mental health system and how much is used to support the children's mental health care. And with that language allowing the funds to be used to pay for training, I think we need to know how much of the block grant is spent on training and how much is spent on services.
This bill does not advance from this subcommittee. Everyone agrees that establishing a children's mental health system will not happen with one grant, act, or bill. In the House of Representatives,
House File 690 is our children's mental health bill.
Republican Representative Joel Fry floor manages a bill he says is the groundwork to have statewide mental health services providing equal access to children. The title of the bill says this will establish a children's behavioral health system, a word Democratic Representative Mary Mascher says needs to be replaced.
Behavioral health implies that it is something that can be fixed or cured. People with chronic mental health diseases, and children have them, we already know that. Behavioral therapy, behavioral kinds of systems don't work for them. They need long-term care. They need the correct medications that are going to address their needs. And they need constant monitoring by health professionals who understand these chronic illnesses and can provide that service.
Masher offers an amendment changing this language.
So that's what we have done in this bill. We have changed the title from behavioral health system to a children's mental health system, which includes not only behavioral health, but neurobiological, substance abuse, and mental health. So all of those things would be included.
Masher also wants to add more provisions to this bill, like adding transportation and home visits for early childhood to the core services. Representative Fry says he appreciates these efforts.
It's something I could certainly have more conversation about. One of the key things that I want to make sure that we're doing as we put this together is that we're creating a system that, one, we can fund and is sustainable.
Right. So
that would be one concern I would have. But secondly, I also want to get the experts again with their input into what some of these services might mean. And the core services that we've outlined are those services in which all but one are covered by Medicaid at this point. So we would definitely want to have conversation about funding as it relates to those services.
Some of these efforts will be funded at the county level. Property taxes, services may be covered by private insurance or Medicaid. A legislative services agency fiscal analysis indicates in the first year, the state will need to provide $3 million. Representative Masher says this bill is a step in the right direction. However,
until we know where those dollars are coming from, we should all feel a little bit insecure about supporting something when we don't know how it's going to be funded. Those are critical, critical discussions in whether we do it right or wrong.
Democratic Representative Lisa Heddens supports the bill with some reservation.
I'm going to support this bill today, but I know it's not the best bill that I think we could have come up with together. But families want something. We have absolutely nothing out there for them, and they want something. They want some sort of structure in place. They want somewhere to go to find out, how do I navigate this mental health system? Because they don't know. They don't know where to go. This sets up a structure for us to do that.
Representative Joel Fry says there is still more work to do, but this is a start.
This is not the only thing that we have done this year or that we will do this year as it relates to children. We have also expanded, in today's legislation, the crisis-wide hotline for children's mental health services. We've provided additional funding for developing mental health professionals in rural Iowa. We have eliminated the waiting list for children's mental health home and community-based services waivers. Folks, we are taking this serious, and it's a comprehensive approach from many different angles.
The bill passes, but 14 Democrats vote against the bill, including Representative Masher. They say the bill doesn't include enough services, nor does it have sustainable funding. It is now ready to be debated in the Senate. This is Iowa Public Radio's weekly podcast, Under the Golden Dome. I'm John Pimble. A home or business using solar arrays to generate power is still connected to the electrical grid. If the customer delivers excess energy to the grid, their account is credited. This is known as net metering. A bill in the Senate alters some of this arrangement and will increase the cost to most customers who are generating their own electricity. Republican Senator Michael Breitbach says this bill affects new solar customers.
This bill will grandfather in all tariffs for existing private generations, but will require all new private generation installed on or after the effective date to choose from one of four tariff options laid out in the bill.
These new net metering plans include an infrastructure charge or a monthly demand charge. The excess energy a customer generates can still be placed back on the grid, where their account will receive energy credits. Another plan they can choose is called a buy-all, sell-all. It requires customers to buy all their electricity from the utility while simultaneously selling electricity they generate back to the utility. And another option is open-ended.
There is a fourth option that's a catch-all. This option is in there so that we don't have to come back. If a fourth option becomes available, it can be added without legislative action.
This rate structure could be determined by an electric utility designed to recover their cost of providing electric service. It would be subject to the Iowa Utilities Board approval.
This bill recognizes that solar people use the infrastructure that everyone else uses to distribute electricity. However, our municipalities and our RECs are able to charge a meter fee, plus they're also allowed to charge a maintenance fee for the electricity flowing from a customer, if they have a solar install, for the electricity flowing away from their facilities and flowing back to their facilities. It's kind of like using the road. If you've got an electric car, yes, you pay a fee for your license. That includes about half of our road use tax funds. So does my gas car, provides about half of those funds. I also buy fuel for my car. If you don't, if you're using an electric car, you're still using the infrastructure, you're still using the road, but you're not paying the fee.
Democratic Senator Kevin Kinney says it's not accurate to say solar users aren't already paying a fee to utility companies.
The utilities, to me, are attempting this power grab under the guise of fairness, even though all solar customers already pay a fixed service charge to their utility each month, whether they pull energy or not. To me, we're saving the utility companies in the summertime at peak times when these facilities are putting electricity back on the grid. We don't have to build another power plant.
In the bill, there are exceptions for a facility that produces renewable fuel. That means an ethanol plant that wants to use solar energy would not be subject to this bill. Senator Kinney proposes two amendments that would also exclude agriculture, like a livestock operation, but they are defeated. Democratic Senator Joe Blokum says the bill's exceptions should include more agriculture.
If the biofuels facilities, who are enormous energy users, got let out of this bill, why can't small farmers who want to raise hogs and dry grain get the same advantage of the biofuels producers, who after all depend on Iowa producers for corn and soybeans to produce biofuels? You know, it's no time to be messing with the economics of what's going on the farm. Right? Low commodity prices, the Trump tariffs, a lot of uncertainty with what's going on with climate change. We've got a crazy flooding going on. It's hard being on the farm.
Democratic Senator Rob Hogue says the Iowa Utilities Board has said solar users should pay the same basic service charge as everyone else.
There is another half of the equation. And it may be why the Utilities Board has said that the basic service charge is the correct charge, at least for now. By the way, there's nothing that says the utilities can't petition for rulemaking to get the Iowa Utilities Board to change its mind. They can do that. Instead, the utilities are doing an end run here, coming to the political body to make a decision not based on science or facts, but on politics. That's what they're doing. And that's wrong, and that's bad, and it endangers an industry that now employs over 800 people in our state.
Senator Breitbach says right now, solar customers can't be charged for other services like maintenance.
They are not allowed to charge for maintenance of the system. The utilities can charge a meter fee, $8.50, but they cannot charge to maintain the system. That's not allowed. What is the benefits to solar? Well, let's talk about that a little bit. Some of you may not know that I'm a solar owner. I did a solar install this past year. In fact, let's talk about what this solar install did for Mike Breitbach, okay? I'm not gonna tell you what the solar install costed, but I'll use an example of a $100,000 installed solar system that was installed on a commercial building like what I did.
Breitbach says with this $100,000 example, after tax credits, a person pays $18,820 for this kind of commercial setup.
The lost revenue to the taxpayer of Iowa and other taxpayers, $81,180. That's how much we're subsidizing the solar industry. Solar industry does use our infrastructure. As I pointed out before, when they use the infrastructure, somebody's got to maintain it. I feel it's only fair that they also do that.
This bill passes, but not completely on party lines. Republican Senators Zahn, Green, and Kapoutsian vote against it, and Democratic Senator Lycum votes for. It now may be discussed in the House of Representatives. Right now, the percentage of customers generating power from solar is around 0.2% in Iowa. I'm John Pemble, your host for this weekly podcast, Under the Golden Dome. A bill legalizing sports betting passed a House committee this week. The chair of the committee says historically gambling bills are not partisan, and to pass in the chamber, it will need both parties to support it. It would allow bets to be placed on university and college teams that aren't from Iowa. This is over concerns that a team member may throw a game to secure a certain outcome in the state. There are legislators that also want to allow state-licensed casinos to offer a phone app to place bets on professional and college sports. The bill is not expected to raise much money from taxes on these bets. For 10 weeks, Iowa Public Radio Statehouse reporter Katerina Sestarik has filed dozens of stories about state government, including many from this week. They are part of our newscasts, and more detailed versions can be read right now on iowapublicradio.org. Her work is always of great help and assistance to this podcast. We also have great insights from Radio Iowa's Kay Henderson and the many members of the press pool at the Capitol. Script editing and story help comes from Iowa Public Radio News Director Michael Leland. This may be the first time you've heard this weekly show. We target about half an hour for each episode, so if you want to learn more about what happened back when it was 15 below zero, explore our archive of programs. You can hear the old ones and the latest episode easily by subscribing with your favorite podcast program. That could be from Google or Apple, or download or stream a show directly from our website, iowapublicradio.org. Under the Golden Dome is a production of Iowa Public Radio.
Under the Golden Dome is supported by the Iowa Bankers Association. Bankers across Iowa are ready to help Iowans reach their financial goals to get them where they want to go. Learn about the difference of Iowa banks by following Iowa Bankers on Facebook and Twitter.